in this episode.
I got a crazy thing to ask you guys here. Do you think, because we're talking about 18 to 23 year olds making some pretty substantial financial decisions, all right?
Up in that Lambo, bro.
Right. I mean, they're making some pretty substantial financial decisions. And I can only assume, I've never been in their shoes, but if you're some of the top dogs in the country, I mean, you might be getting offered 800K here, 1.2 here, 1.1 here, shoe deal here, car deal here. Do agents ever get involved in this?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And again, relative to, we're still talking about the 1, 2, 3, 4% of college athletics. Right. So when we're talking to the masses of college sports and college kids, it's going to trickle down to those guys eventually. Again, we're talking about the top, top guys. But I also have heard, too, when different SEC schools, they've got NIL deals set up for every player on the team already. Mm-hmm. So that's a big recruiting piece going into it. Yeah, not just the All-American, the All-Every guy. You know, that's happening, yes. And then so the average Joe college athlete that's a rower at wherever, he's going to end up getting some stuff down the line. It's just not to, it's not trickled down that far yet, mm-hmm. but it's getting there.
What is up, everybody? Welcome back to another edition of The Closing Pitch. My name is Spiker Helms, and this is a show about people, culture, and how to create a winning lifestyle. This episode is literally going to be just about baseball, but more of the culture aspect and how it has evolved over the last like 10 years, I feel like, even 20 years, just the transfer portal rules, NCAA. We had actually Waldorf back about a year ago talking about compliance.
Yeah.
Yeah, talking about compliance and the rules. And it's just, I find
those are out the window.
Yeah. Yeah, completely out the window.
Like, if you listen to that episode, might want to rephrase it now.
Yeah, and he actually called out like the NIL was going to come out, name, image, and likeness. And he said like, yeah, that's down the chute. And then it's here. And now it's the wild, wild west. Players can make money. And we now have the transfer portal, which is the topic of the conversation, which I think is a super important conversation, because back when COVID was happening, we gave you guys the tactical guide. And then when Evan came on board, we gave you the revised version. I'm kind of viewing this as the version three. Chapter three of the tactical guide to recruiting. Is that a fair assessment of this episode?
Could be. It's just kind of understanding the entire landscape as it's changing so dang fast.
Yeah, it's extremely important to know what's going on, because a lot of high schoolers do not know what's going on. So
a lot of college guys don't know what's going on.
Exactly.
I'm not sure there's we know what's going on.
There's a lot
on
of college coaches that don't know what's going on either.
A lot of college coaches are kind of what in those? Oh my God.
Do you think there's someone like in the NCAA that's just in the back room like, you know what? I want to make this rule up. And then he just makes the rule up and then
that's what it seems like. Who knows? I mean, there's no rule. It seems like there's no rules right now. They're trying to give a lot of autonomy, try to get a lot of, you know, power to the player, power to the student athlete, and which is great, which is good. But there's nothing governing it right now. There's no, you can only do this. You can only do that. It's get what you can.
There's nothing wrong with regulation. There's nothing wrong with rules. But it's like, it's trying to be fair to the student athlete. Because like, as a student athlete, if you get stuck and you don't make the right decision, you're pretty much down the creek when I was playing. Like, it was like, yeah, I'm stuck with this coach that I don't like at all. I can't make a move. And we always thought like, well, why can't we just do 1 year of transfer? And then now it's here. But it doesn't seem like that's the right decision either.
Well, what's kind of seemed like to me over the past 2 years, especially, is like prior to that, it was an overregulated, overruled, just everything had a process to it. The compliance officer played a humongous role in everything that they do. And I mean, like, in order to get anything done or transfer or do this, you had to go through 8,000 loopholes. I mean, you lived it. So, I mean, it seemed like it was overregulation. And then all of a sudden it was like a day in time and the NIL happened and the 1 year free transfer and boom, everything's open. And let's just wait for the negative press to hit. Like, it just, the floodgates opened and now it seems like the wild, wild west.
Do you think like the NCAA plays like game theory in their heads? Like, oh, if this happens, then this is potentially what could happen? Or do they just like make the rule and then see what happens? And then
no, I just think they're one, underfunded, two, understaffed at the NCAA. And I have no idea. I'm just off the cuff with that. But it just seems like whenever there's a ruling, it takes 2 years to figure out if this guy broke the rule. Why does it take 2 years? Why does it take a year and a half? Now you're just waiting on you know, back in the day, if this guy, you know, did whatever wrong, you know, the investigative part, it just took forever type of thing. Same thing with the rules. I mean, there's just a thousand rules in the book that you got to figure out and tiptoe around, which is obviously leading to a bunch of talk of the top 50, 60 schools saying we're going to break off and do our own thing. We're not going to basically have rules. We're going to just go. I think that's part of it that's coming down the line, too. With this NIL thing, it's like we said, there's no rules. There's no governing body right now about that. I think it's getting to the point where it's going to come down the chute where the colleges are going to have control of those things. I think there's talk in legislature out in California that basically started all of this with the NIL, that they're trying to get a law passed to where the schools actually take in the money and they divvy it out to the student athletes. So it's not just going to be the school saying, okay, you can do this. It's all going to funnel through the schools. And the schools have to okay it at this point. But there's no limit, obviously, on what the student athletes can make. And obviously, it's predicated on Twitter followers and your advertising mm-hmm. dollars, your how good you are on the field. And it's starting to spill over to all of these mid-major good players in their programs, seeing that they can make a bunch more money somewhere else. And obviously, they're going to hire more profile schools, places, opportunities. And it's right now becoming more about the buck than it is the loyalty playing at your school.
The name, image, and likeness. Are you for that, or are you kind of like it needs to be regulated?
Oh, absolutely. It's you can say what you want, but college athletics is a professional business. Just look at the money they make. I mean, seriously, football, basketball, now baseball's getting way into it as well. There's a lot of money to be made. Those schools are making money. The other side of that too now is once you start making that money, and if the schools start regulating, you know, the money that you get. A lot of that money, the donor dollars that come in, those fund the softball program. They fund the rowing program, the whatever else, Olympic sports.
Yeah, because then your other sports are going to
get
crushed.
So now all of a sudden, if you start regulating all those dollars and reallocating those dollars to other places to student athletes, right now the colleges are spread thin with trying to fund those other programs. That and the big football games, the six Saturdays that you have, that you make X amount of dollars, millions every fall, that goes a long way to your entire athletic department. So there's going to be a whole lot of different ways to make those athletic departments go to work. There's a ton of things that go into it.
I hate to be the bad guy here and say let's just axe the sports. What's the purpose of having all these different sports? Let's have rowing, let's have crochet, let's have knitting club on Fridays. Why are schools required to have these other sports if the sport is not as popular as the other sports? I'm just thinking.
Are you saying popular or profitable?
Popular, athletes.
Most of the Olympic sports are not profitable.
I don't think most college sports are not
profitable. As far as getting into the red, they're not profitable.
But I guess
there are bringing schools and bringing students into your university.
For tuition,
so then why do they have those other sports? Is it just they're bringing it in because it's going to have more diversity in the student body, or is it I just don't understand why they have let's put another sport on. Let's have 40 sports in our school. What's the reasoning?
Well, if you have too many, obviously it's going to spread yourself way, way thin. But I think it's more of a culture. It's more of just kind of how college athletics have always been. And plus, Title IX plays a part into it as well, too. So you've got to be able to be offering equal amount of sports for men and women, which is mm-hmm. a great thing.
Yeah.
So I think that plays a big part of it in it as well, too. But you've got other universities that take the approach like you're talking about, have less sports, put more of their dollars into less sports and be more successful.
Do they allocate different money towards other things outside of sports, different clubs? That's what I'm just trying to wrap my head around is they have all these different sports. They're all not making a profit. That's a loss on their balance sheet, basically. So why would they do it? And I guess it's just they're going to spread it out to different clubs as well. It's because I just don't know. Yeah. I haven't been in the athletic department.
I don't know either. It's one of those things where it's either you're bringing a lot more residual effect part of those into your school. That's a good question. I don't have the answer to that.
I can't assume that. Obviously, a vast majority of collegiate sports operate in the red, like Evan said. I mean, very few sports are profitable, and very few sports are extremely profitable and make the university a lot of money. The only two that I really know are football and basketball. I mean, baseball for the most part across the country is a in the red sport.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you're not making money. Maybe very few programs are, right? And then you look at all the other programs. Yeah, of course they're operating in the red with travel expenses and coaching payroll and just everything else that they bring in. But I think you got to look at it this way too. I don't think universities are setting up those programs to overall operate in the red. They're going to make their money somewhere. They're going to make it through tuition. They're going to make it through
the students
that come in because of that, because their friends are participating in sports there and everything else that the culture brings. And that's where they're going to build that. You know, I mean, you just ask a normal student who's not playing athletics, you know, would you rather go to a school that has six sports and isn't really notable, or you want to go to the University of Alabama?
One of the things that I was at Mizzou when Mike Alden was our athletic director there, I've said this a few times, he took the approach that the athletic department was the front porch to the university. And if the front porch is cool, looking good, you want to sit on the swing and hang out in the front porch, then you're going to want to be a part of it. And that's why a lot of those sports are there. The football, the basketball, the softball, all of the other swimming, diving, soccer, the whole shooting match, the holistic approach. It's a fun place to be. I want to be a part of that. I want to be a part of a winner. I think that's the biggest thing that brings to mind for a program. And it just, again, has residual effects into the business department, the marketing department, the medical field, the whole thing. Everybody wants to be a part of that and be a part of that community. I think that's probably right. The reason for it.
Mm-hmm. Let's go switch gears to transfer portal, which is the main portion of this conversation. We touched on the NIL. What Dave came up with the article, right? Or was it you, Pratt?
Which one?
The SLU player.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's wild. So, like, so when did this happen? When did the free year happen? Was that 2 years ago when COVID hit?
Yes.
So when COVID hit and everybody lost a year of technical playing or time or eligibility, the NCAA, one, granted those back. So nobody lost 1 year of eligibility. And then with just the overall transition and what I can assume is the influx, because a new class was coming in regardless and an old class was technically not graduating going out, I think that the NCAA then offered up a free year of transfer to any NCAA athlete, meaning they could transfer from Division I to Division I without a penalty of sitting out. Whereas in the past, if they were to transfer from the same division to same division, they would have to sit out a year, and then they'd be granted eligibility to play. Is that correct?
Yep.
Okay. So then, now what in the past they could do is go Division I to Division II, and they would not have to sit out, I believe.
Yeah, if you went down in level, yeah, you can play right away.
And you could always go down to, let's say you started off at a Division I in any sport, didn't really work out, and you went back to junior college. That was kind of one of your options to go play right away. You didn't lose a year of eligibility, and then you could transfer back into Division I if you played well enough and found another fit. But now there's this whole new element to it, the free year of transfer. So players are literally at any given time. I mean, I know several baseball players that are on their fourth and fifth school because they went D1, JUCO, D1 to another D1, and they haven't faced one penalty yet. And it's kind of creating this free agent market, and like roster turnover is crazy. I mean, sometimes rosters are losing 15 to 20 players in baseball to the transfer portal every year. I mean, football's going nuts now with it. Like the example we just brought up, because now it's kind of, I feel like every Monday morning I walk into Pratt's office and be like, I got a new crazy story. I'm like, Pratt, what in the world are we talking about? So like SLU basketball, right? We're from St. Louis. And their top point guard who led the country in assists last year just left SLU. I mean, a place where he was thriving.
And they're going to have a heck of a team next year.
And they're going to be really, really good. Why? Because the free year transfer and the NIL. He's going to go to the University of Tennessee. So he's moving up, right? Mid-major to Power 5 SEC. And SLU might be able to beat Tennessee next year, by the way. I mean, you never know. But he's moving up because he's going to play at the top level. And he's getting paid $200,000. It's the Wild West. It's crazy, and that's what we're talking about. Like, we have this conversation all the time right now. Like, Me and Pratt talk Mizzou football all the time. We're nuts about it. We got the top wide receiver in the country. That doesn't happen at Mizzou football if the NIL doesn't happen. That does not happen. But because we were able to pay a lot of money, we got him. Now, is he going to stay for 3 years? I doubt it, because he's going to probably go get more money somewhere else if he plays good. That's what we're creating with this. It is a total free agent structure every year, which is kind of interesting because that's kind of how the coaching carousel was. Forever, you know, you said it earlier, well, what if my coach leaves? Or what if this? I can't leave under the old rules. I get screwed as a player. You know, because the coach could have a good year at a mid-major. He can go 10-2 in football, and all of a sudden every SEC school is calling him because of coaching vacancies, and he just made $2 million extra. What about me?
Yeah, and then you're stuck.
Now the player can. Now the player has
like
a good year.
I feel like if it wasn't the NIL, if we weren't in the NIL deal, I think that it would kind of set this at bay a little bit. I think when you put the NIL in, it puts it on steroids and, like, again, it's a power to the player, which they should be able to make money.
It's
like
a free market society.
They definitely should. I always thought it was weird how a football coach could make $1 million, but then the baseball player is technically only making, let's just say, a scholarship, $20,000 a year. He's only making $20,000 a year, and you're at the top level. You are the top 5% of human beings that can play a game at a very high level, and you're only making $20,000.
And you walk into the bookstore at your school,
yeah,
and your jersey's hanging there with your name on it and your number of your jersey, mm-hmm, and they're selling it for $55, and you're going, what do I get?
Yeah.
Well, now they do, and that's the power that they're trying to give them.
I don't know what the answer is, and I don't know if this is good or bad. I think if I was a player, I'd be all in, because then I can make that adjustment. But I'm big on loyalty too. So it's like, damn, like if I have a really good coach and then I get offered,
well, put it this way,
$500,000, like,
hey, yeah, hey, I'm all about
life-changing money a little bit for college kids.
I'm all about loyalty. Don't get me wrong, because I was watching the chat boards of, like, SLU basketball, and man, the fans are coming unglued. Like, obviously, they're upset. And this is going to be something that I think fans are just going to have to get used to, because this thing ain't changing. This is only going to get crazier. But I would ask those fans, hey, if you got offered another job that's going to pay you $200,000 more next year, what are you going to say? Nope, I'm loyal, man. I don't want that money.
It's like the Albert Pujols deal.
Just
like,
think about it.
Cardinals fans are going to hate me for this, but I was on the side of Albert, and I was like, well, if you do the math, though, he still makes a little bit more if he goes to California. Like, that's
sure.
And someone's going to say, well, it's millions of dollars. How much money do you need? I'm like, yeah, I get that, but when he's done, he's done. He has another 40, 50 years if he's lucky to live, and he has to use that money, and then he wants to set up his family. So it's like,
you want to know something else that's kind of crazy that's coming out of this whole deal? Because I'm of the opinion that this is just the beginning. I don't think a lot of businesses have jumped in to the NIL payments yet, in terms of like sponsoring athletes and getting, you know, visibility for their company. I don't think probably 80% have jumped in of where what will probably be in 2 to 3 years. So I think this is going to get crazier.
Well, they don't know whether the NCAA is going to come out with another rule. I think it's just the fact that the NCAA makes these rules
I don't know if these businesses know exactly what they're going to get out of it.
Yeah, the return on investment.
You know, they're going to have a signing autograph party with great player A, and that's all you get? Or is he going to be sitting there at my car dealership and bringing guys in off the street to help me sell cars? They don't quite know what the return is on that X amount of dollars that they're giving those student athletes. Basically, what they're doing is everything that's been underneath the table as far as payments in the white envelope that's left at your front door at your apartment.
It's happened all the time, yeah.
It's above board now. That's all it is. It really is. There's no real difference in that.
It's
all of those payments from those donors are legal now.
It's influencer marketing 2X. Because, like, an influencer marketer gets their money off of just social media, and they don't do a lot of appearance. Like, they do appearances, but a lot of companies don't know how to use that effectively. Like, mm-hmm, talking with a number of people that are and higher up in companies, they're like, yeah, influencer marketing just doesn't work for us. I think it's one of those things, like you're saying, is that they have to figure out, how does this influencing marketing / athlete work, college athlete, and how can we actually leverage it to help with our brand? It's very intriguing, and I don't ask a college kid, like, okay, how are you going to promote us? Like, the college athlete doesn't know. He's like, he's not a creator. He's not an influencer marketer. Like, that's not his job. His job is to work out, get ready for the game, and then post on social media every once in a while, and that's it. Like, not many athletes have that business mindset.
Well, it's also going to stretch the haves and the have-nots. Mm-hmm. It really is. I mean, it's going to get the distance between the 19 car dealerships in small town college, whatever, as opposed to the whatever place that has one, that guy's going to go because there's more money somewhere else. It's more of the, you know, the rich get richer, the poor get poorer type of situation. It's going to be stretching farther and farther away from, you know, we're still going to see those same four or five teams in college football winning all the time. That this does not help that issue by any means.
Everybody's going to
go follow those blue bloods, those seven or eight schools that have a chance to win, and they're going to, just because they have all the resources.
What is the athletic director thinking? What's the coaches thinking? How do I get more players, better players, if this is in that position? Because I'm thinking of like SMU. Remember SMU? They had the death penalty. They were a small school, but then they were able to get all these players to come in. Obviously, they were cheating. They had those technically NIL deals.
Right.
Couldn't someone do that for a smaller school?
Absolutely. If you have the resources, sure. And to what relative length, though? I mean, you need 100 of those, 1,000 of those guys at the bigger schools. That's, you're competing against, you know, everybody else. And then you get all of those guys that have $100,000, let's say, or whatever the number is. You get all of those guys giving every student athlete 100 grand. Well, I'm going to go there. You got half of the student athlete population getting 100 grand at this place, and they're going to win maybe, but they're not going to win as much as these dudes because everybody's getting the deal.
Well, and I'll put it this way too, like a lot of the big Power Five athletic departments have now fully invested into hiring people to just run NILs, just run funding, just get that sponsorship set up, just get advertising set up. I mean, you're looking at the Alabamas, the LSUs, the big name schools in the country that have a whole team of people collecting deals for their athletes right now.
They literally made a business development partner.
Yeah, it's all it is.
That's so what they did.
and they're gonna. It's a whole advertising marketing department around that. And then you have schools who cannot put funding into that. Like I read an article, St. Louis University, to my knowledge, did not have a person working on an NIL deal yet. Now they probably will soon, but they don't. Now D2s, you bet your butt they can't do that. Very, very few, but they don't have the budget to. So the haves and have-nots separate.
You're going to have someone that has a business mindset at an education institution to know exactly what to do.
It all comes back
to what's going to have to happen.
It all comes back to ROI, though, on it. You know, return on investment. That there are going to be some donors that are just have mega money, and they just want to see their alma mater and favorite program win. But the vast majority of money, if I had to guess, it's pouring into the NILs, or that will pour into the NILs, will be because they've seen case studies and examples of how that athlete has influenced and now projected a more profit for that business. That's what they're going to do. If all of a sudden some people can start to prove that by sponsoring these athletes and having them be influencers and advertising with them, it's brought return and got them into a younger audience who follows that athlete, well, then more people are going to flood the market.
It's going to be real hard to put a cap on this thing. Incredibly hard at this point, because basically they just flip the switch and it's wild, wild west. Do what you need to do. There's no limit. How do schools, how do universities, how do student athletes deal with possible limits coming down the chute? Because since obviously our country's a free enterprise system, you get what you can get. You make your own business, you make your own way, you carve your own path in life. How are you going to be able to limit that with these schools and universities? You know, because the buzzers are going to go crazy. Well, I'm interested to see just how they put a cap on it. And I don't know if they're going to be able to put a cap on it.
But if they put a cap on it, then guess what the conferences are going to do? They're like, all right, we're out. See ya. Where we want to
have that leverage.
Yeah, they definitely do. They have the TV deals. They have everything.
The funny thing I saw the other day was now they're starting to talk about the winners and losers in the transfer portal. Like, it's nuts. Like, they're literally like talking from like a basketball and football standpoint. They're like, here's our top 10 transfer portal team rankings. These guys really crushed it in the portal, which is nuts to me. I'm like, Mizzou basketball is number 5 in the transfer portal. Is that a good thing or a bad thing? I don't really know. But like, the way I envision it is like, the buzzer is going to go on the last second of the last game, and you're going to wake up the next morning, and they're going to be like, all these athletes who just won the Natty are getting recruited by all these other schools to go because they're getting offered this, 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 and this, and the national championship team just lost their 5 starters to NIL deals. Like, that's what I envision the craziness of how it's going to go. And then it's simply put, it's a trickle-down effect. We talk about this nonstop because, like, everybody thinks the NIL is just going to affect, or transfer portal is just going to affect the big schools. It's all trickle down. You know, the big schools are going to pull the top dudes from the mid majors, like that SLU guy to Tennessee, or, you know, Missouri State's Friday night guy is going to go pitch at Tennessee next year, or Florida or whatever. You know, it's just going to happen. And then what does the mid major have to do? Are they just going to sit there and say, oh, woe is me, sucks to suck, we lost. We lost our guy. No, they're going to go pull the next guy from the next level down, or find the low mid-major to the mid-mid-major, or go pull the Central Missouri's top pitcher or top center field. They're going to pull him.
Well, think about this. Think about a college baseball coach. If I have a good team, I'm a mid-major, Division II, III, really good program. That's not the Power Five. It's not the – I don't have the super budget that everybody else has. But I got a dang good thing going. I want to develop my student athletes. I want them to get out there and play and develop. I'm not going to send my best players out in the summertime to play. Mm-mm. There's no way.
No,
You're not going to go to the Cape. Sorry.
To hide them.
No, you're going to stay here on campus and work out and lift. I'm not going to let everybody else take a peek at you and look at you and go, hey, come to my place. It's just not going to happen. So now you're hurting the development of the player. So there's a lot of different – this transfer portal and NIL thing, you're eliminating the amount of high school kids that are going to be able to go to college. The opportunities are a little bit less. Maybe I get 7 or 8 or 9 or 10 usual high school guys every year. Well, I'm only going to get 5 or 6 because I'm going to get 5 or 6 more portal guys. I want that instant. So me as a college coach, I got all kinds of different entities working against me, working for me to help my team get better. And it's a shame because you can't develop those guys in the summer when it's a huge – you remember the summertime play? That's a huge development piece. Mm-hmm. And now – You're trying to find ways to keep them on campus and keep them hidden from everybody else. You don't want them to leave.
Do you think it's going to evolve into where there's going to be a front office staff where the coach doesn't really recruit anymore because money's involved and there's transfers now? Because like if you think about professional baseball, the manager's completely removed from making decisions on what players they should bring onto their team and what players they shouldn't bring onto their team. It kind of helps them because they're able to manage the game a little bit better and develop players a little bit better. Now the pressure of the college coach is there's a lot of pressure. I gotta A, develop my guy, B, try to create a winning team, and also C, the guy that I just developed to help us win the team, help us win, just could left. Be transferring.
You got to keep recruiting him, even though he gets to your place. You really have to. You really do.
It's a combination of being the GM / development coordinator / sales team.
Oh,
it's crazy.
Just think, there's no 2-year deal anymore. That's not even a thing. There's no 4-year deal. It doesn't work that way. We're like, you kind of walked into a baseball scholarship as a freshman, and you know, unless you're at a very high Power Five or something like that, you're not getting your scholarship. You have to do something to totally get it revoked. It's a 1-year deal now.
You know what stops us? You know what stops us is contracts. That's what stops it. That's what stops the transfer. It's like, all right, we're going to give you the NIL deal, but you have to commit to us for 4 years.
What kid's going to do that?
Probably none right now.
I mean,
what happens if it's $32 million?
Well, yeah, that's a no-brainer.
I mean,
but how many $32 million contracts are out there?
It's true.
Relative for college, but you know, but how many of those really cool? Okay, yeah, that's true. I'll take that for 4 years. There's no kid going to do that. That doesn't happen in professional baseball. What's his name? Judge just turned down $1 gazillion because he wants to bet on himself in free agency with the Yankees. He knows he's going to be in a good spot for the next time around. It's the same thing with a college guy. Oh, I'm this freshman All-American. Nah, I'll wait. I don't want this 4-year deal because I can get double or triple from this other school or whatever it is. It's PM in professional athletics.
You don't think contracts would actually solve it, though?
I don't think so because kids will just turn them down.
I got a crazy thing to ask you guys here. Do you think, because we're talking about 18 to 23-year-olds making some pretty substantial financial decisions, All right.
Up in that Lambo, bro.
Right. I mean, they're making some pretty substantial financial decisions. And I can only assume, I've never been in their shoes, but if you're some of the top dogs in the country, I mean, you might be getting offered 800K here, 1.2 here, 1.1 here, shoe deal here, car deal here. Do agents ever get involved in this?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And again, relative to, we're still talking about the 1, 2, 3, 4% of college athletics. Right. So when we're talking to the masses of college sports and college kids, it's going to trickle down to those guys eventually. Again, we're talking about the top guys. But I also have heard, too, in different SEC schools, they've got NIL deals set up for every player on the team already. Mm-hmm. So that's a big recruiting piece going into it. Yeah, not just the All-American, the all-every guy. You know, that's happening, yes. And then so the average Joe college athlete that's a rower at wherever, he's going to end up getting some stuff down the line. It's just not to, it's not trickled down that far yet, mm-hmm. but it's getting there for sure. But we're still talking about that. And again, this is in the infancy stage of everything, but we're seeing those because those are in the forefront. Those big deals are right out front. And everybody thinks every college athlete is getting this. And they're not getting this right now. It's getting that way. It's getting to that point. But right now, it's those top guys that are getting those deals that's setting the precedent for the other guys down the line.
It's going to seem that way when someone rolls up with like a Porsche and then the snapper has a Camry 98.
Oh, yeah.
So. Well, he's talking about the one. That's cool. I mean, which school? Or I don't know if you remember which school, but they were setting up funds now to where every piece of athletic clothing that gets sold or any businesses wants to do just general advertising with the athletic program, it goes to a fund and that gets divvied amongst, I believe, every single athlete in the athletic department.
So it's just like what MLB does with their merchandise.
I'm guessing.
The holistic approach, for sure.
Yeah, so now, and it was like if you kind of, because it was something along the lines of you could sign over your name to the school for that year. So now the school has rights to put your face, your logo, your likeness, your name on any gear that they want to sell, and then you get direct benefit back on it.
At what point is there a players union?
Who knows? Like,
I mean, that's where it's heading.
I don't know. 18 to 20 year olds aren't great at starting those things. So,
so how does this affect the high school athlete? If you're listening to this in 20 years and you're in Mars, but. How does this affect the high school athlete?
Well, I think again, it limits their opportunities. Yeah. It really does. So they've got to do a little extra on their profiles. They got to do a little extra on their videos. They got to do a little extra on their emails. They got to over communicate. They got to oversell themselves to college coaches. They have got to make that college coach. They've got to recruit the college coaches basically and say, "Hey, I'm over here. Come look at me." You've got to do extra. You've got to send those updates every week. You've got to be able to just knock their door down. And again, there's no amount of communication that's too much going towards college coaches. You've got to make sure those guys have an opportunity. Because right now, most of the college seasons at this point in the year, we're almost the first part of May. They're way over past halfway point. Most college coaches are trying to set their summer recruiting schedules. And they're talking to kids right now. Oh, I need to go see Johnny on, you know, the first opportunity I have on the first weekend of June because that guy's my top priority. I haven't had a chance to go watch that kid pitch or play or whatever it is. So I need to go find him in wherever Indiana or whatever tournament he's at. So they're setting their schedules right now. So you need as a player to over-communicate and oversell and just bug those guys and have great communications with those guys to make sure that you entice them to come out and watch you play in the summertime.
How many oral commitments do you think are going to get dropped because of this transfer portal?
Well, you're just not going to have as many.
I'm just thinking like when it gets to the crunch time and they're about to sign their junior year and the coach at the very last second says, "Oh, sorry. We already got someone from the transfer portal."
Yeah,
like that's a real deal.
Well, and I think I agree with Evan on it. I think that from a college coach's perspective, now there's more on their plate attention-wise. There's more things to look at in terms of how they can find players, which to the high school athlete, like he said, you have to now go above and beyond to gain attention. You cannot just rely on them coming and seeing you because there are – I mean, every college coach I talk to, like it is a part of their morning routine now, especially in certain months when the portal gets real active. It's a part of their morning routine to get on the transfer portal.
Well, I'm sure our phones are going to blow up on June 1.
I mean, just every single morning, it's like, I get my cup of coffee. I sit at my desk. I open up my laptop. I check the portal. Doing it every morning. And why? Hold on one second. Think about why. This is a real important thing that a high school athlete needs to understand. It just got easier for a college coach to go get an older, more proven player. It just got easier. And a lot easier. High school athletes are not proven. They're babies. They're baby deers coming into college. They don't know what to do. Very few can walk in freshman year at any level and be successful and play and contribute. Very, very few. And I'm talking probably less than 10%. It just got easier to find an older, proven player.
There hasn't been any freshman, like when I was playing, that was, you'd always hear these guys coming in and be like, oh, this guy, he was really good. Like, coach really loves him. And I'm like, all right, let's see what he has. And they weren't that good. Like, they struggled. They struggled tremendously. The only guy that came in, and I wasn't there when Berger came in, but Tate Matheny, when he came in, he was the real deal.
Yeah.
Like, he was a true freshman that was like, yeah, you're probably as good as one of our juniors.
Yeah, the thing that I always would tell our freshmen, especially our rookies, you can be the four-hole hitter, play shortstop every day the whole year, great. You can get one at bat. You can get one inning on the mound, whatever it is. You take your freshman year, you wad it up and throw it away. The experience of being there, the experience of the travel, the experience of knowing what the league is all about, wherever you're at, the experience of knowing what school is all about, your social life, how to get around campus, all of that stuff plays into the part of your experience your first year. Now, all of a sudden, okay, now your second, third year, that's when you take off. Very rarely does it happen that first year. And all of a sudden, boom, I'm a freshman. I feel comfortable. I fit right in with all these old guys. And I'm right in the middle of the lineup. And I'm that junior type guy right now as a freshman. That doesn't happen very often at all. There's few and far between. It just doesn't. It really doesn't. And I mean, that's nature of the beast. So now the coaches are going, oh, okay, I've got that guy that's already broken in. He may not be the best player, but he's going to fit right in. He's already a junior, senior for me. I don't have to develop as many freshmen. I don't have to go extra work on Saturdays and spend extra time in the cage with these guys to develop. This guy's already developed. It actually makes my job easier. As a coach, I like the development part. I like being in the cage. I like being helping those guys get after it. That's where those rookies come in and the young guys come in. You still need to have those because you need to obviously fill your program with some of those guys, but it makes it a lot easier for the coach. But also makes it a little tougher because you got to watch not getting too many transfers. Mm-hmm. Then all of a sudden you become a school where you get 20 transfers every year. Every year you're cycling out new blood, new rosters. And it's one of the biggest things that's hard to do for colleges is to create that team chemistry. I think coaches in colleges really need to work on that team aspect, especially in the fall when a spring sport's easy because you can the entire fall and winter to get that team chemistry going, that camaraderie, the team building, all of that stuff. Fall sport's a little tougher because you got a couple of weeks in the summertime, boom, you're playing in August or whatever it is. So the winter and the fall, the spring sports have a little bit easier on that end. But I think the big team chemistry part of it is huge, hugely important for your guys to mesh. Just like this year we talked with Missouri basketball. Mm-hmm. They're going to have 8-10 portal guys. Well, they're going to need the summer. They're going to need the fall. Who are you? Well, how do you play? What do you do in this situation? It's going to take time. It just does. That's just college athletics. So that's one thing that's going to be a detractor to the team aspect part of it and winning baseball games. It's, you know how it is. Whenever you get you can get nine just Bulldogs, dirtbag type players that may not be the greatest players, but those dudes are going to win. How do you get to that point with guys that just don't know each other? You have to fast forward that process. That's tough to do.
It's because in the past, it was you had the JUCO guy, which was you basically rented him for 2 years, mm-hmm. and then you have the freshman, which then you have for four, potentially 5 years. Now you have this other category, which is the transfer portal, which is now 3 to 4 years. So it's like the cycle is now changed. How does a coach divvy up his roster on percentages? Because I know from a junior college standpoint, you didn't want it to be like above 50% because then you're just out there recruiting again for the next 2 years. Just trying to get your pipeline right to make sure you're stable. How would a coach go about that now?
I don't think there's an answer to that.
Yeah.
There is no answer to that. Because what happens whenever you're six sophomores, let's say, that have been starters as freshman sophomore year. Let's say these six guys are the best, and all of a sudden five of them just play like dog and they're not good, or they get an injury, or you get a family situation. Now you're out four of them. Boom, all of a sudden you got to go find four dudes. You're not going to fill them in with freshmen. You're going to fill them in with the portal. So I don't think there's an answer to that. I don't think you get, okay, I need X amount of guys this year. I need X amount of, because this guy's going to graduate in 3 years. I need to plan for that guy being gone in 3 years. Well, that guy may leave next year. And all of a sudden, it's just on a daily whim. It's on a yearly whim. It's a semester whim. Some guy might just tank it grades-wise. Family problems. Like, Who knows?
I'm just thinking like the clubhouse conversation.
You don't know.
I feel like it's going to be a clubhouse conversation when it's like the salty senior. He's like, oh, he's a pure blood. He's been here forever.
Yeah.
And then
you'll have
the portal guy. Oh, that guy was a portal guy. Like, yeah. Oh, that guy's 100%. A juicer guy. Like, it's definitely going to be, there's going to be some smack talk going on in the clubhouse.
And to go back to what you just said here, I think this is an important thing for a high school athlete to understand, because I really think they need to understand this. With the addition of the opportunity from a college coach standpoint to go into a transfer portal and fill 10-20% of his roster every year with instant impact guys, that limits the available options and opportunities for high school athletes, especially those fringe guys. Okay, those fringe guys that maybe were fringe D1, fringe D2, that would get those offers to walk on or preferred walk-ons, or, you know, hey, he's got some tools and let's bring him into this Division I. You know, he'll get a chance to develop and build, and maybe he'll be a player for us. Those opportunities, I don't believe, are going to be there. Okay, those opportunities are going to get shifted to lower levels, like junior college, Division III type levels. Okay, and that's going to make that brand of baseball better, which is great, or brand of sports better, in my opinion. But the overall outlook from players, because we still have a lot of players, and I'm not ever going to shoot down your dream or anything else like that. I'm just going to give you the honest facts. A lot of our players are still in that D1 dream or bust type model, and they're all thinking that that opportunity is going to be there, and I hope it is, but let's have a plan B. Let's have an understanding of the landscape and how it's changing, because that's going to now – Your path to D1 is still available. It might just have taken a hard right to a junior college or somewhere else to where you have to go play and prove yourself.
You better fight like hell if you want to play Division I baseball, and you better be willing to not be satisfied with the brand. Now, don't be attached to a single brand like, oh, I want to go to Mizzou because it's Mizzou. Like, bro, there are so many different colleges out there. You don't need to be attached to a freaking Tiger. It's just a logo.
One of the other things that we haven't talked about yet either, too, that plays into the limited amount of opportunities is the draft.
Yeah.
That's the other thing, too. The older guys, the junior seniors, that would be a 40th round, here's a courtesy draft pick, complete pro baseball. That doesn't happen anymore. The draft is only 20 rounds. Mm-hmm. Now the older guys are going, I'm not a draft. I'm just going to stick around for another year of college. Who are those fringe junior guys that used to get a chance to get $1,000 or $10,000, or here's a chance to go get a baseball card and play 2-3 years of pro ball.
Or the JC guys.
Or the JC guys.
Yeah.
It doesn't so that's another factor, too, high school guys, that plays into the amount of opportunities that you have at whatever school you want to go to.
I'm going to add on to that, too, with the NIL deal. Why would I go accept a draft pick and be paid $800 a month with a signing bonus of 10 grand when I can just stay at the school and have an NIL deal that's worth 15 grand plus my schooling?
Absolutely. It's just common sense.
High school players, you better fight like hell.
it's
a lot harder.
High school, you have to recruit the coaches.
Yeah. Yeah.
The coaches are going to find you. Yeah, they're going to watch you. You have to recruit the coaches. Just get out there and work at it. That's all it is. Again, I tell all the kids, take this like it's a class in school. This is your class. You have got, if you want it bad enough, you'll work at it enough, but recruit the coaches. Entice them to get out there.
Speaking of classes, we just filmed your recruiting class that we are going to be editing. Oh, I am.
better you than me.
And we're going to be putting that on the VIP. So Tigers who are listening, we are going to be posting that up. I have a feeling it's going to be a 2-month project. Me and Drew are going to try and knock it out in a month. But anyways, any other thoughts on this
No, my last thought is this. Like, if you're a high school athlete or even a parent of a high school athlete and you're listening to this, I can try and put myself in your shoes and you're probably like, well, what are we supposed to do? Like, I mean, it sure as heck seems like...
I just listened to your recruiting service conversation. Now you're putting this stuff on me?
It sure seems like, man, the opportunities are few and far between anymore and that my son or daughter just literally has no chance. Well, that is not what we're saying. I think the opportunity is still the same out there. If you want to find a place to play, it's out there.
There is always a place to play. It's just a matter of you being attached to a brand or a logo that's fast in your head and you're trying to get to that logo. It's like there's only so many spots for that logo.
I just want you to understand, and I think that it's beneficial for the family and the athlete to come to grips with this, is that the landscape is changing. You better know what is changing, how the ground is shifting, how the rules have now changed the way college coaches approach recruiting. Because if you know that, then you will ultimately know where to put your attention at, okay? It's no good putting your attention into a place that has absolutely no possibility of becoming a future for you. It's a waste of time. You know, it might be a dream, but it's a waste of time. And so it's really important to understand that landscape because it can help you make some very educated decisions for your future.
No, it's tough. It really is. Same thing with Dave was saying. But there is a place to play if you wanted to play. And that bottom line, it's just a little bit tougher. That's all it is. It's just a little bit tougher these days. The fringe development guy is not going to those big schools anymore. They're just not. They don't have time to develop you. They want to win. The budgets, the resources they're pouring into the top schools. Those coaches have to win. Otherwise, they're not going to be coaching. That's how it is. It's college athletics. It really, that's where it's shifting to. And that's what the portal has been all about, is more winning for the top schools. And that's the, again, the have-nots are getting have not anymore, and the haves are getting haves. That really, it's just kind of the nature of the beast until somebody, something gets control of it and equals out the competition part of it. It's not going to change.
Guys, that's this episode of The Closing Pitch. David Berkme, Evan Pratt, thank you. Make sure that you follow us on Twitter. We are all three on the platform. I will put that in the description below. If you want to listen to more on the recruiting end of things, I am creating the class that Evan created. And I also, in the last episode of the Tiger Interview Series, Recruiting Services, I listed all of the recruiting conversations that we have had over the past year and a half. And all of them are applicable to nowadays. So if you want to listen to those episodes, please do. It'll give you a better idea of the landscape and it'll catch you up to speed on what's happening. So until next time, guys, see ya.
See you guys.
Peace.